let me just, I might as well go full shill, right? Should I just go full shill?
Go full shill.
Let's just go full shill. Let's just go full shill as I watch, like, because there's been a debate, right? And I understand a lot of Yankee fans can't stand Brian Cashman. They can't stand the owner. He's nothing like his father. He's this, he's that. I get it. I get it. And early in the year, as the Red Sox were beating the Yankees, and they have beat them like a drum. Can't argue that. Can't argue it. Right? Outside of maybe 2019. 2019, the Yankees had the Red Sox number. Outside of that, in the Aaron Boone era, the Red Sox have beat the New York Yankees. Even when they're bad, finishing in last place on the field, they have ultra success against the Yankees ace and Gerrit Cole, and they have beat the New York Yankees. But look at what they did at this trade deadline. And there's a lot of people since that, with all the winning that the Red Sox have done against the Yankees, and they've won a championship in 18, and they won a championship in 13, and obviously 04 and 07. And it's like, well, I'd rather be the Red Sox. I'd rather be the Red Sox. I'd rather have won more championships in the last 15, 20 years and been in last place a whole bunch, but at least they have the championships. It's about championships. Well, let me just say this for the Boston Red Sox right now. The Boston Red Sox are the franchise that traded away Devers, their best player, right? Didn't want him, couldn't make it work, didn't communicate with him, created an atmosphere where they felt it was better to move on from him. And then they're right. Like, I killed them, I pounded them. How do you trade Rafael Devers? You don't care about winning, blah, blah, blah. Since then, they went immediately into the tank a little bit and then rallied. And they've thrusted themselves right back into this wild card race. In fact, as we sit here today, the Boston Red Sox are a game and a half behind the New York Yankees and second in the wild card. Bravo. They said they'd be better without him. This team has shown them that they were right. The young kids have played better. They've done all of this, thrusted themselves back into the mix here, and at the trade deadline, they did nothing. They added Dustin May, who hasn't pitched well for the Dodgers in God knows how long, had one of the more weird and tragic, scary injuries that I've ever heard of as he tore his esophagus eating a salad. That's true. And they added Steven Matz, left-handed bullpen that we all are very familiar with his career with the New York Mets. That's what they did. That's the Boston Red Sox, the organization you'd rather be like, the franchise you'd rather be, the owners you'd rather have, the front office that's smarter than Brian Cashman, the idiot. Look at how many other teams that are in the mix with a chance did far less than what the Yankees went out and did. Just saying. The Red Sox are right there. They're a game and a half behind. They have owned the Yankees, who are ahead of them. Owned them. Didn't feel like adding at the deadline. Didn't feel like showing this team they believe in them enough. Didn't feel like really doing things to go chase a championship with this Boston Red Sox team. But keep telling yourself you'd rather be a Red Sox fan because they won a championship in 13 that's long forgotten with a group that isn't remembered. And, you know, 2018, they had a pop-up year and had a great year. Great year. And how many last place finishes since then, and now with a chance to finally break all that and have a good season, Jack Squadouche at the trade deadline. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Dave in Rockland County. What's up, Dave?
What's up, C-Max?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
W trade deadline for the Yankees. I wasn't expecting Cashman to pull through. Like, we all know how he's done the deadline the past few years. Stuff, nothing happens. Last year, you just get jazzed in some no-name relievers. He was named Mark Leiter Jr. and Emil De Los Santos. Mm-hmm. This year, though, he cooked.
Yep.
He didn't get a starting pitcher, though, but made up for that by stacking the bullpen.
I completely agree with you. Now, look, not many starters got moved. He could have tried to go get a starter. I don't think there was really the impact starter they were looking for there. So, he's got legitimate arms. He added two legitimate arms. Now, Bird is a good reliever. Bird spins the ball well. Bird had an excellent start to his year. He's under control next year. He has not pitched well in the last month. Hopefully that can right. He can turn that around. I'm not going to include him. That's a depth bullpen piece. It's a good piece. Right. They did just need arms. Don't get me wrong. I think he's better than Ian Hamilton, even though he struggled down the last month or so. So, like, it's depth. It helps. But he went out and got two legitimate back end of the pen arms, like two legitimate arms to go with Weaver, go with Williams, and go with Tim Hill. There are five guys back there that you fully trust in any moment of any big game. So that's where, I mean, I know Williams, right? Williams has to prove that, but his stuff and his pedigree and his resume, you know, do warrant that as of right now. So there's no doubt. Plus what he did with the, like, it's going to, today was about the moves he made out of the bullpen. And without question, that was where they needed the most impact. But I think he's done a really great job revamping the bench as well. Like, offensively, they are a far better team with far more legitimate options off the bench and have legitimate guys with left-handed pitching, which has been a problem for them. So, I mean, I think, and he's brought in speed with Caballero, and someone who, I think this is significant, and maybe I'll re-hit this again sometime between now and 5 a.m. Like, how do you handle Anthony Volpe? They put a video out of me yesterday talking about that. I don't know. Like, I wish, you know, I'm not going to give you that hot take, strong opinion of this is what you need to do with Anthony Volpe, because I don't know. I don't know if sending Anthony Volpe down is the right answer. I don't know if benching Anthony Volpe is the right answer. I know he's going through the yips a little bit. I think he's capable of being far better. And right now, when they need offense without Aaron Judge, he's hit six home runs in the last 11 games, or now 12 games, and he's been an impactful piece hitting game-tying home runs in the bottom of the ninth. So it's like, well, what do you do with Anthony Volpe? I don't know. But I think the Yankees, right. I think the Yankees yesterday told you how we're going to handle it. We're going to light a fire under his ass. We're going to bring in Caballero, who absolutely has very similar offensive numbers and is an excellent defender with speed who steals bases, as he's the best base stealer in the American League the last 2 years. So, like, I think that's how they're going to handle it. Hey, Volpe, this is not just Peraza anymore. Like, if you don't play, we have legitimate options. If you keep throwing the ball in the dirt, we have legitimate options to play someone else at shortstop. So I think they did an amazing job. Now, is it good enough to go win the World Series? We'll find out. But I think Brian Cashman really has done a great job.
I think they should platoon Volpe and Caballero. Is there a way they could do that?
I mean, I platoon them? No. I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't go as far as to say platoon. I think, you know, you can give him a break, and clearly Anthony Volpe has made significant strides in stretches where he's coming off long breaks, right? The last 2 years specifically. Great start to the season off of, you know, the season not beginning yet, and then a really good 2 week to 3 week stretch right out of the All-Star break where he had a full week off. So it's kind of there. He's a smaller kid. Like, there are some real, like, data suggesting that Anthony Volpe could use more days off than the Yankees have been able to give him. There's no doubt about that. But Jose Caballero is a right-handed bat. I don't think you're looking at straight platooning him. But because he could play multiple spots all over the field, he's not the offensive player that Anthony Volpe is. He's got an OPS career wise lower, if you can believe that, this year lower. His batting average is a tick higher, but he also steals bases and plays a great shortstop, which, you know what, that puts you on the field over Anthony Volpe at the moment. So I don't know if I'd go straight platoon, and I don't know if I would make the switch right here today. Because Anthony Volpe didn't make an error today, and I think we're going to do that every day. It's going to be a new segment. You know how they have, like, days since a accident at manufacturing plants and stuff? We are going to have days since last Anthony Volpe error. And so today we're going to hang up. Let me do it right here. Write the big number one right here. Days since Volpe error. One. All right, we're going to hang this on the wall. Days since Volpe error. We are one. And if that, you know, if we can keep that number rising, then he plays. If it keeps getting reset, then I think Caballero at some point is going to start playing more. Straight platoon, no, but Caballero could play all over the place. Caballero could play outfield. He can play second, third, short. He can do it all. So I think it's just a really nice bench piece. The bench is far stronger today. Third base is, in my mind, is fixed. He's a legitimate third baseman. He's not an all-star. He's not a superstar. He's a legitimate third baseman. And the bench is far better. So I think Brian Cashman improved the offense as much as I would have asked for. And I think he did a great job with the bullpen. Now the rotation is now the question mark. There's no doubt. The rotation, who's starting game three of a postseason series right now? Without even seeing him pitch an inning right now, the answer is Luis Hill. But how can you answer that with a pitcher who hasn't thrown an inning yet? So, like, as we sit presently today, what's the answer? Will Warren? Is that good enough to go compete in the playoffs? That's a valid question. Lou in La Jolla. What's up, Lou?
Hey, Chris. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Oh, well, thank you for making the call, bud.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm 74 years old. I'll talk about baseball, but I wanted to just start by saying I'm impressed that you know Midnight Rider by the Allman Brothers.
Of course.
I used to host a radio show from 1968 to 73, a rock music show.
Okay.
And I played that Idlewild South, the album that it's on. I used to play it from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
So is that I don't want to dwell on this, but is that well known by people your age? I mean,
probably not. I don't know. It's on commercial. It's on whiskey commercials now, whatever I've seen on TV. I know it for, you know, I'm a classic rock guy. I love the Allman Brothers.
Yeah. You have an excellent singing voice.
If you want it, the best way to interrupt me is with compliments, Lou. So that's all. That's always welcomed here. But yeah, no, I love the Allman Brothers. Melissa Whippin' Post. I'm a big Allman Brothers guy. But when I got this show, I did the two opens because I have two distinct hours. Like it's either 2 a.m. or midnight. Yeah, so I have two different opens, and I thought the Midnight Ride, the Midnight Rider. So
great. Yeah.
Yep.
My favorite. I'll say one more thing about music, and then I'll shut up. My favorite outdoor concert of my entire life was at Woman Skating Rink in Central Park, 1971. Allman Brothers, Dwayne was still alive, and they were just amazing. Anyway,
yep.
I wanted to talk about Giancarlo Stanton, and I feel that if Judge comes back as a DH,
mm-hmm.
Stanton is hitting much too well to be benched.
Yeah.
And unlike Rafael Devers, who you happen to talk about, was a lousy third baseman, in my humble opinion, and he's an even worse first baseman.
Yep.
But Stanton was a decent fielder. Now, he'll never be Keith Hernandez or Mark Teixeira, but I think he should play first base until Judge can play right field. Do you think that?
Lou, it's not. I mean, look. For years, first base was viewed as that, right? Just, put him at first base because all it is catching the ball. Anyone can do that. I would be very concerned. I can't imagine just giving Stanton a first base glove. Now, we've talked about this right now and expecting him to do it this week. Like, if you want to work on that with him in the offseason, because the Yankees do, Ben Rice is probably. We'll see how the Yankees operate next year. There was a lot of discussion about first base. Obviously, Vlad's off the market. I always forget his name. I got to write it down 100 times so I remember it. But the Japanese superstar who plays first and third, something with an M. I always forget it. And I believe he's been hurt. He just came back and his first at bat hit a home run. I saw that on SportsCenter or something. The Yankees early on this year in the offseason were it was discussed that was going to be the apple of their eye.
Murakami.
That he was going to be their focus in next year's offseason. I don't know. Not with Ben Rice's emergence and the idea that now you can go save money at first and go get Kyle Tucker or someone proven here at the major league level. I don't know. But if in the offseason you want to give Stanton a full offseason at first base, there's also the discussion of Judge now. With the elbow injury, is it time to move Judge to first base? So if you want to give these guys a full offseason of learning the position, I'm into it. The idea you could just put a first baseman's glove on Stanton and say, go out there, kid, especially with the way Volpe throws. I can't see. I can't see him playing the outfield either. If he plays the outfield, you're talking about a couple of innings, because you, if you have the lead in the fifth or sixth, like, how do you keep Stanton out there in the outfield knowing that, I mean, anything could touch the grass? Like, he can't move out there. You want to do it to see if he can make an impact with his bat early in the innings, and then once you get a lead halfway through a game, you go and bring in you bring in Rosario to play outfield, or you bring in Slater, or you bring in whomever, like Caballero, whoever. There are a bunch of guys who can play corner outfield. Okay. But that scares the hell out of me. That is the biggest issue with this team right now. The back end of the rotation, and in the short term, what are they going to do with Giancarlo Stanton if Judge comes back as strictly a DH for a long time period? If it's a week, it's a week. You probably give Judge, you know, you don't give him every day. You give Stanton every other day. Maybe you put Stanton in the outfield for a few innings like I discussed. For a week, you could do that. I don't know if you can do that long term if Judge needs a month. If Judge needs the entire month of August, I don't know what the hell they're going to do with Stanton. Marty in Milford. What's up, Marty?
Hey, buddy.
What's up, man?
Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, Marty. What's going on?
Listen, so Judge is not IL right now, so we have an open roster spot.
Correct. Well, I mean,
what happens when Judge comes back? What are we doing, Caballero? Caballero has three options. They could send him down.
You could. You absolutely could. I don't know what they would do.
I think that's what's going to happen.
I believe that's probably what's going to happen, too, because the other candidates to be sent down are Rosario and Slater, and neither of them have options. So you're not going to trade for them and DFA them. So I think there is a good chance that when now, again, it's the next 8 days or so, depending on how things go. It does give the opportunity, if Volpe continues to throw balls into the dirt, to send Volpe down and play Caballero at shortstop, because at least that's a viable option as opposed to Peraza. But yeah, looking at it, and I think Jack Curry even intimated the same, that he's got options. You could see Judge, while being a DH, seeing Caballero sent down to the minors, and then September 1st, when the roster expands, him coming back up to the majors.
Because Volpe's not getting sent down. Volpe's a shortstop.
I don't disagree with you, but if he makes seven errors in the next, like if he throws every ball in the dirt for the next couple of games until Judge comes back, I don't know. Like, it's that bad. You can't have a shortstop. He, outside of the catcher, is the most important defensive position on the field. You can't have a shortstop who can't make routine plays. Like, you cannot have it. They've dealt with it for a while. If it really does continue over the next 10 days, they're going to have to figure something out. And maybe it would force them, maybe not to send him down, but maybe it would force them to, you know, DFA Slater, who they traded for, and just say, hey, we traded for him. We thought we needed some depth. We ended up getting Caballero anyway. He could play the corner outfield as well as Rosario, so Slater's redundant here, and we're going to get rid of Slater. Like, I don't know.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you for the first time ever, so which is great. So.
How do you feel about Cashman's day? I'm sorry. That's it, Marty. I hear you. Are they going to win the World Series this year now? I love it. Everyone else, I love it. For the first time ever, you're agreeing with me, and you've gone from Cashman sucks, he's never had a good trade deadline ever, to now we're going to win the World Series. And you're not alone. I'll call him out. Sean Marash. Where are you, Shawnee? As you're killing, every time my name gets mentioned, it's like, he had 5 minutes to not kiss Boone's ass? Like, nothing but knocking me from my overly optimistic Yankee views and my defending of certain people. And then today I'm listening at like 6:30 leading into Keith at 7, and he's gushing about how great the Yankees are, and for the first time we feel like we have teams here in New York who can give us a parade. That's okay. Now Brian Cashman is great, did an incredible job, and the Yankees are destined for a parade. What a quick turnaround. You know what? A lot of people have been tweeting and saying, you know, I saw Kratz on the Foul Territory podcast saying a lot of people need to apologize to Brian Cashman. The producer for Talking Yanks put out a tweet saying people owe Cashman an apology. Forget that. You owe me an apology. The Yankee shill deserves an apology. The Brian Cashman shill deserves an apology. Sean Marash can't, my name can't, it's like Boomer can't stop calling me fat, and Sean Marash can't stop acknowledging the fact that I defend Brian Cashman. And yet today, oh, today we're talking parades. Forget Brian Cashman. That dude's set. Give me the apologies. That guy's going to the Hall of Fame. I'm not sure how much spending money I have for Italy. Let's go. Apologies this way.
Give out that Venmo real quick.
Let's go. Yeah. Apologies. Forget Cashman, me.
Oh, what's he doing? Kissing Boone's ass?
It's the first time they give us a chance to go to parade. That's all it took. All it took was a couple of relievers, and suddenly Sean Marash is talking parades. 888-808-1019. Quick break. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. We'll come back. Continue to take your calls as we get you all the way to 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. Again, there are things to mix in. Carlos Correa back. Back to Houston. They're bringing the band back together, and I love it. We'll get to that. We'll get to Bridges' contract with the Knicks. And for the New York Giants and this impossible schedule, is there a chance that a team inside the division takes a step back this year and maybe that schedule is not as tough as we thought to start the year? 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Quick break. Back after this. Zoo, just real quick. We don't have to get too much into it, but in your mind, is there a moment that is just, for whatever reason, burned into your memory that has zero significance whatsoever? Like, has no significance whatsoever, but for whatever reason, it just, like, sticks out in your mind, a moment where you can easily put yourself back in that particular moment, even though it was the most mundane things, a ride to school on a random day, or, like, whatever. Because I have one. Yeah.
Many.
Yeah, because I have one, for whatever reason, I tell this story a lot. It was after football practice. It was one of those rainy, cold, late September, October, probably mid-October, cold, rainy football practices. And I couldn't wait to get home and take a hot shower. And I just remember, like, taking the shower. I remember getting out. And I just remember, and my room was in the basement of my house back in Franklin Square. And I just remember at the top of the stairs, getting ready to go downstairs, and I opened the door. I had a plate with a donut on it, one of the Entenmann's donuts that have, like, the chocolate donuts that have, like, the little balls on top of it. Remember those? Like, Entenmann's donuts, it was, like, part of the mix of the, like,
oh,
the long
okay.
box.
Oh, okay, it was one of the mixed ones.
It was, like, one of the mixed ones, and it was, like, a chocolate donut, and it was, like, powdered sugar on it, and it had the little balls on top of
oh,
it.
Oh, no, I got you now, I got you.
So I had one of those on a plate. I had a glass of milk in my mouth as I was opening the door with my right hand. And I remember going downstairs all excited for a random Monday Night Raw because something was going on with Stone. Like, I was looking forward to Raw. And for whatever reason, like, I have that moment, like, ingrained in my head. Top of the stairs, donut in one hand, glass of milk in my mouth, opening the door with, like so happy that I feel better. I've showered. It was rainy and I was like muddy and disgusting. And so I was like, I was happy I was showered. I was looking forward to the donut and glass of milk and Raw was coming on. And for whatever reason, like, I just remember that moment so well. I don't know why. It's just one of those moments that just stand out to me. 888-808-1019. Yeah, just a beautiful moment. Just a happy fat kid with a donut. I was done with football practice. I had taken a nice hot shower. I was ready to go downstairs. Nothing was going to bother me. I had no homework or I had no intention of doing my homework.
Either way,
I was just going downstairs ready to watch Raw with a donut and a glass of milk. It's just one of those moments that just stuck with me for whatever reason. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Dan in Massachusetts. What's up, Dan?
Hey, Mac.
What's up?
You guys were talking a little bit. Someone mentioned about a concert, and it reminded me. I took my 8-year-old niece to her first concert.
Ah.
In 88.
Oh, in 88.
And who do I see? Chicago opens up, then the Beach Boys, and then they both play together.
Nice.
Terrific.
You took your 8-year-old niece to a Chicago Beach Boys concert?
Correct.
In the 80s, that's all. I would love it. Was your 8-year-old niece going, I thought this was a Madonna concert?
Hey.
Uncle Dan.
We did that later on. Hey, Mac, Saturday is when I'm going to talk to you about Volpe. We'll go round and round like we usually do.
Okay.
I'm all about, I'm always in with Cashman anyway, but while we got the rain delay, okay, I'm watching MLB station,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't believe my ears. They said on Volpe for the month of July, he went 0-32 on four seam fastball.
Yeah, I saw that. They said that on they showed that graphic on the on the broadcast the night before. Yeah.
Oh wow, that's hard to do.
That's impossible to do. And underneath it, they said through June, like April, May, and June, he had a .299 batting average against them.
No kidding.
Yeah,
wow.
So he hit .299 against four seam fastballs, and then in July went 0-for.
Imagine that.
It's amazing. It's a problem for him. High velocity is a problem for Anthony Volpe. I don't think there's any doubt. Especially up in the zone, it's a problem for him.
I agree with that. He'll hit the slider because it's less velocity. But on Cashman, I always like what he does. I don't trade a 22-year-old guy in Dominguez who's getting his first full year of experience mm-hmm. with a low salary. And I don't trade Spencer Jones, who could be something special.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I agree. Now, listen, there are people. I got a tweet, and thank you for the call, Dan. I got a tweet. Let me read the tweet. You can also hit me up at @CMACWFAN. I guess I said, the Midnight Ride, successful deadline, which I meant for both teams, by the way. But no way! He was a prospect hugger again. This team needed a shakeup and to go get a star. He added around the periphery. He's addicted to adding players from Pittsburgh, Colorado, and Miami. I mean, I don't know what star in the pitching department, like, what star did they need? They don't need another star. Like, I really don't think that they need. Listen, you can get a top of the back end of the rotation. Like, I wanted Duran with how good he is in the controllable years he's got. It would have cost the Spencer Jones. You want to say that's worthy of it? You want to say trading for a reliever? Is he that much better than Bednar, who cost you nothing? Is he that much better? I don't know how you knock what Brian Cashman did. He was able to get everything they needed while not giving up any of the significant future. Like that's what deal making is. If he would have come up empty, you and I would have been having a different conversation right now. I promise you. He didn't, so it's not, and I know nothing I say will make you believe me, but I promise you, if the Yankees, if that Bird trade was the only trade they made to help the bullpen, right? I think Bednar came out first. I apologize for this. I had to sleep. I got to sleep, people. I'm sorry. So I'm sleeping midday. I slept through the trade deadline. I just had to. And then I even watched the game later on. I had to. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to function and speak to you at midnight. So, like, I think the Bednar trade was first. But anyway, like, if Bird was the only deal, if even the price for Bednar was too high and they decided not to do it, like, if it was just Bird and say, hey, we got a legitimate reliever here or something, like, and even if it was just Bednar, I'd be like, I don't know if that's enough. I needed more guys. He got three legitimate relievers and two real good back end of the bullpen ones. Like, what did you expect? And if he would have gotten nobody to play third base and Peraza was still the starting third baseman, I'd be furious. And he needed more. He needed three arms out of the bullpen. He got three arms out of the bullpen. He needed two legitimate guys. He got two legitimate guys. Like, he got what we all were expecting. I promise you, I would have been very critical if this trade deadline went differently. Very critical. It didn't. Prospect hugging, yeah. And he was still able to get deals. Like, let's be honest. Tyler Rogers pitches to a better ERA this year, no doubt. But who's got the better arm? Like, he wasn't closing. San Francisco, Doval was the closer. So, I mean, they got the two best relievers, and the Mets paid a much heavier price. And other teams paid a much heavier price for what they got. Brian Cashman waited out the deadline and did a great job. I don't know how you could argue it. Dave in Virginia, what's up, Dave?
Hey, Chris, thank you so much for taking my call.
You got it, buddy. Thanks for making it.
Okay, so I'm not attempting to play devil's advocate, but I really don't agree with the fact that Brian did a great job today. I always think that the Yankees overrate their prospects, and history kind of shows that. If you look at...
Well, I think this is a deadline that really is a confirmation of the thought that the Yankee system is far better than people thought.
Why do you say that?
Well, because they were able to get everything they need without touching the top echelon of that. They traded for two guys in the top 10, and they got two of the better relievers moved at the deadline. They got Bednar, who's got a better ERA than Mason Miller and has a year of control. And I'd rather have Mason Miller, but it took the third best prospect in all of baseball to get him. Third best prospect in all of baseball.
Yeah. That's very fair.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with them not getting Mason Miller. But if you look at Houston's roster now, if you look at Seattle's roster now, they're in wonderful shape. And I really think that the Yankees needed a starting pitcher. And
I think that's fair.
Okay. And give me Alcantara. Give me Dylan Cease.
Yeah, but they didn't get moved.
I'm sorry?
They didn't get moved.
I know. That's why I thought the Yankees could have given up more to get them.
Well, how do you know? But like that, it's not like we have a template of what they got and said, oh, why didn't the Yankees match this? Like, we don't know what they were asking for. Like, they didn't move them.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I thought there was an opportunity. They were his fans.
Yeah, but I don't. You like, make it sound like you know they would have moved him.
The Yankees didn't get you. The Yankees didn't get a starting pitcher.
I understand that, but I'm saying you mentioned Alcantara and Cease. What if they both insisted I need Jason Dominguez? Do you want to do that?
Jason Dominguez, yes, I would give up because he's a 5 or 6 inning player. When you have a lead in a postseason game and he only hits from one side of the plate.
I mean, as of right now, as a rookie at 22 years old, I'm just saying for a starting pitcher, if they said, I need Jason Dominguez plus, you would have been, okay, let's do it. For Alcantara, who hasn't pitched all that well, I know his last couple starts have been good, but since his injury, he was terrible at the start of the year, or Dylan Cease, who, you know, is a little overrated, and look at his postseason numbers, they've been terrible. So for the future of Jason Dominguez, you'd be willing to give for those two players, one of those two players.
Chris, I'm not as high on Jason Dominguez as everybody else. And in a big spot, you need a big at-bat this year. I really would prefer Trent Grisham over Jason Dominguez. And I really feel like the reason why Dominguez isn't in his natural position, which is center field, is because the Yankees deep down don't believe that he could go get it in center. And if you want to make room for a Spencer Jones at some point, you know, you can't just have a plethora of outfielders. So
I
think Jason Dominguez would have been a pretty good trade chip, right? You got to give up something to get something.
Yeah.
And I know what you're saying, that Cashman, did a nice job of holding on to the prospects that he coveted, but I do think at times the Yankees overrate their prospect. And then the other question.
Yeah, but my only point is you can't. How can you say they overrate their prospects and then say those prospects could have got them a lot of value? Well, are they overrating them? Why would for Dylan Cease, would the Padres have overrated them too? Like you know what I'm saying? Like the Yankees overrate their prospects, but they should ship them for really great talent because, well, if they're overrating them, what makes you think the rest of baseball wants them?
Yeah, I guess I'm just looking at it from a Yankee fan standpoint, seeing, how many Yankee prospects, so to speak, flop either with the Yankees or with another organization. And then, the other question / point I want to make is, look, I know the Dodgers won last year with starters going 3-point, on average 3.1 inning per start, but their lineup was so stacked. I think there are so many things that need to go right for you to win a postseason series going bullpen by committee. You are betting on so many guys, so many relief pitchers to perform. And then also, do you really trust Aaron Boone to use his bullpen correctly? So the fact that there are so many pieces – to get through a postseason bullpen by committee.
Right.
And with Aaron Boone at the helm, do you really like the Yankees' chances this postseason over some of these other improved teams in the American League?
Yeah, I do.
And Detroit and Toronto.
Yeah, Toronto just lost, four out of their last five. They added Bieber, who, was once a Cy Young Award winner, hasn't pitched in God knows how long.
The Yankees rock anyway, knock on wood.
What's that?
The Yankees have had a lot of success against anyway.
You're correct. That is correct. Yeah. They've had real well. But Seattle, they've owned Seattle. They just swept Seattle and all their great starting pitching. Like, I don't know why, because they got Suarez. Like, Seattle's now suddenly an unstoppable team. I look at, the Astros
have played. They got Naylor also.
Yeah, I mean, okay.
Seattle credit for getting Naylor.
Yeah, all right. I mean, and they got Caleb Ferguson as a relief pitcher. Like, I just, and again, the Aaron Boone stuff. He navigated them through the World Series. I know that was easy. They were bad teams. Somehow they won their playoff series to get there, but I know they were terrible teams. Like, yeah, I don't think. And Aaron Boone's been given five different guys now. They're all good relievers. If he goes to any one of those in any situation, how could you not expect them to be successful? Like, that's the whole point. Now you've got arms in the bullpen that you can go to and feel like any one of them can be successful. Last year, I don't think it was the case necessarily with the bullpen. Guys got to pitch well. Do I think Aaron Boone inhibits them from winning a championship? No. I know many of you disagree. I don't. I thought he had a great American League playoff run. A great American League playoff run last year. He had to navigate first base, bit pieces, Oswaldo Cabrera playing first base he had to maneuver Clay Holmes into being a good reliever again. Like, I thought he had a really good, but when I'm watching the manager of the year in Cleveland pitch to Giancarlo Stanton over and over again as he's hitting home run after home run, like, yeah, I felt like the Yankee manager was a clear-cut better manager in both of those series against Kansas City and against the Cleveland Guardians. I have no problem. I'm not worried about Aaron Boone. I know many of you are. I'm not. We'll see what happens. But he's got a bullpen now where he's got legitimate arms. And, yeah, I mean, they still do have an ace. It's like they have no starting pitching. They have an ace, and Carlos Rodon's got to be good, whether it's as the second starter or the third starter or the fourth starter. Like, Carlos Rodon is going to have to be good. They got Max Fried. They got Carlos Rodon. They got other starters who are Will Warren, outside of two starts, is pitching to a 3.5 ERA. Luis Gil won Rookie of the Year last year. He's got to come in and pitch well. And the bullpen's deep enough where they should be able to get four or five innings and then feel good going to the bullpen. Let's go to Ray in Waterbury. What's up, Ray?
Hi, Chris. Great show as usual.
Thank you.
Before I make my net point, these people that want a starting pitching and bullpen, last caller, bullpen by committee, Yankees got four guys that close.
Yeah. No, I agree. That's not bullpen by committee. I completely agree.
No.
They got legitimate. They have now transformed a bullpen that was terrible into one of the better bullpens, if not the best bullpen in the American League.
Right. They matched the Mets, or maybe even better.
Diaz is really good. It's close.
Yeah, right.
I think the top three are better for the Mets, and the bullpen's probably better for the Mets. But it's close,
right? And obviously it's so obvious. They didn't. Miami didn't move Alcantara, and San Diego didn't move Dylan Cease.
No.
That means the prices were out through the roof.
Of course.
These people say, callers, fans say, well, why didn't you get him? Because he didn't move. That's the reason he didn't move. They want to clean out your farm system.
Yeah.
And
that last caller didn't get it. He was like, well, that was why it was an opportunity. No. If he was moved, we could look at the deal and say, well, what could the Yankees have beaten that deal? He didn't get moved, so God knows what they were asking for. I gave him the example of Jason Dominguez. What if they were asking for Ben Rice and Spencer Jones? I don't know. Are you willing? Like, who knows what they were asking for?
And they probably did. I think what San Diego did was stupid. You give up the number three overall.
I think it's a bit much.
Too much for a guy that's had a little bit of off year. And you know what? He's throwing 103, 102. This guy could, you know, they all wind up with, I hope not, but they all wind up with Tommy John. I wouldn't give up your number three prospect. You can, not for a closer.
No, I mean, I don't disagree. It is very tough. In a world where relief pitching is so fickle year to year, and I know he throws 100 miles an hour, and he's a great talent, and they have him for the next 4 years. And I was willing to move for him some of the better, like I was willing to move a Jason Dominguez for him. Just one of those pieces, I think I would have been willing to move because I think that's how much control he's worth and everything. But a top three prospect in all of baseball?
Right. That's too high. That's too high.
That's really high. That's a really high price. And they gave him three pitchers.
I mean, and you know what? San Diego does it every year. Do they get to the World Series? No.
Absolutely. That's the other thing, too. At least I saw a whole bunch of people when that happened. That's because San Diego cares about winning and the Yankees don't. How many World Series has San Diego been to? I'm sorry. Did I miss something where San Diego's been like this great playoff team and, you know, goes on and wins World Series? They trade for a big arm at the bullpen every year. Tanner Scott. Now Mason Miller, they already
have Josh Hader.
They have all these guys. What happens? They go out and spend money on Manny Machado. They go out and give 11 years to Xander Bogaerts. They have Fernando Tatis. They bring in all these high-priced starters. They trade for Dylan Cease. They do all this stuff. Where's their winning? Wanting to and getting it done are different things. That's just a fact. George Steinbrenner wanted to win every single year. He only won when the team was built correctly. The 1980s, he wanted to win every bit as much of 1990 as he did 1996. Want doesn't mean a damn thing. Mark in California. What's up, Mark?
What's going on? I know the last time me and you spoke was about the Stanton trade. I wanted Stanton trade. I was thinking about it, and you were like, oh, my God. Man. But I get it. But what about Bridges taking $6 million less, man, to get the Knicks under the second apron?
Yeah, how about that? Yeah, I'm going to get to it. But, yeah, Mikal Bridges signs a contract on $6 million under the max. It allows them to stay under the second apron in this new second apron era of NBA basketball, and it makes it a lot more flexible. And, really, if you think of – buy-in from Bridges and obviously from the captain, they've really helped the Knicks try to put together a team that's going to, you know, compete for a championship.
Yeah.
And hopefully, look, and hopefully this new coach, you know, hopefully one of the things Brown can do is kind of unlock Bridges. Clearly Bridges and Tibbs were a little bit of oil and water, didn't get together great. He came out publicly and talked about minutes and the bench. And we saw in the postseason what he's capable of at times. It wasn't a virtuoso postseason performance, but defensively, very, very good. He's capable of hitting big shots. Hopefully this coach, second year with the Knicks, can kind of unlock him. But, yeah, I mean, the idea that it's not a max and it's a player that you gave up five, you know, first-round picks for, I think that's that contract news today was a big deal for the Knicks.
You saw what the Nets did with Michael Porter Jr. They got him for way less. They got him for one first-round pick. Crazy. But Porter and him are the same player. But the Knicks also got Brendan O'Connor, who, in my opinion, is going to be a top defensive assistant. This is a deal that the Knicks just got for his assistant.
Yeah, I saw that.
I'm excited about the defense. But, no, I would agree with what, and I was telling my buddies, they were like, you saw what the Mets gave up for Rodgers and what we gave up for Duvall.
Mm-hmm.
And just on top of that, Bednar, who's obviously the better pitcher, Cashman literally dog walked today. They call him the cash god. I mean, I'm more sold on him than I am Boone. We both could probably agree that, because he sometimes makes bad moves, but dude, he's made just a lot of really good moves over the years. I mean, and he hasn't really given up really anybody. That last caller was saying prospects. Name me one prospect that the Yankees have traded away outside of maybe James Kaplan that had actually succeeded in another farm system. Not too many.
Yeah.
But they value their system so high. And I actually went on my buddy's podcast with AC Mac, and I was actually talking about it. Let me actually go hear what I was talking about. This is crazy if this is a fact, because I was actually looking up. Remember when they traded Carlos Navarez?
Yeah.
They traded Carlos Tavares for Elmer Rodriguez Cruz, right?
Yeah.
They traded Flores and Eglin Pereiras for Bednar, and they traded Jesus Rodriguez for Duvall. Last year, I was saying this, that the Yankees churn and burn catching prospects and have a very good understanding of their present and future value, and that's just exactly what Cashman does, dude.
Well, I mean, they've been on fire. I got a break, Mark, and thank you very much for the call. You are right that they have done a very nice job developing catchers. Now, they've sold on some, they've all been successful as out of the gate. Obviously, yeah. I mean, you know, in Boston, he's having a great start to his career there. And even what's his name in Miami? Like they have went through a bunch of catchers here. They have drafted, signed, and developed the catcher position in a huge way. There was a point in this season where I think it was like 7 starting catchers in Major League Baseball came through the Yankee farm, where at one point a Yankee, or came through the Yankee farm system, whether it's Higashioka, like all the, like go dating back to that far. So like they've done a great job at the catcher position, and I'm telling you right now, I think this trade deadline affirms it. I'm not saying the Yankees have a top farm system that's the deepest in the world, but the idea that this Yankee farm system is somehow a disaster and it's one of the worst in the league, and they're just a joke, and it's laughable, and nobody they have has any value. They were able to accomplish the same as most any other, as much or more than any other team at the deadline, including the New York Mets, and did it without trading away anyone in their top 7 prospects. They traded their 8th and 10th best and got everything they could have needed, and did as good a job as anybody else. I think the Yankee farm system, while not at the top of the league or anything, for sure, I get it. But the idea they're just garbage and the organization is in this, you know, downturn. Half the lineup is from the farm system, and they just revamped with 7 different players and revamped their third baseman, bench, and entire bullpen without trading anyone in their top 7 prospects. Tell me again how the Yankees are just a disaster of a system. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Quick break. Come back with more right after this.